You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. I'm Art Ray. Today, we'll be going to the archives to hear a presentation by Hugh Lynn Cayce. Hugh Lynn Cayce served his father's Association for Research and Enlightenment, the ARE, as chairman of the board. He was also author of the book Venture Inward, an examination of safe and unsafe methods of exploring personal psychic experiences, and The Outer Limits of Edgar Cayce's Power, which explores the relatively small number, 200, of readings that appeared to be inaccurate. In this program, he explores a few of the dreams of Edgar Cayce.
We were in Detroit a number of years ago in the 30s. My mother, Gladys Davis Turner, and my father and I, we were staying in a private home, and we were about to leave on Sunday, but this was an emergency reading, which was to be given for a child that was suffering on Saturday. And while the reading was being given, we had pounding on the door and the police demanding that they be let in, and we were all arrested and thrown into jail. I had been a lot of places with Edgar Cayce, but I had never been before in jail with him. It was quite an experience. Now, this has nothing to do with the story that I wanted to open with this morning as we talk about Edgar Cayce's dreams, except that it was this court action that brought on, I think, this interesting dream. Later, the court dismissed the cases against my mother and Gladys and me as aiding and abetting this man diagnosing without a reading, practicing medicine without a license, and paroled him actually to an ARE member who was a parole officer in Norfolk and who used to come out and get his monthly report and get a reading. And this man was a very interesting member because he was responsible for this series of readings on juvenile delinquency, which if you're interested in young people and problems of juvenile delinquency, you'd find interesting. The court session was over, and we were on the train coming home, and Edgar Cayce dreamed one of the most peculiar and strangest of his dreams. He saw himself born in 2100 as a little boy who was talking and explaining to him, as he had begun to talk, that he was not the person they were calling him, but that he was Edgar Cayce, and that there were records of him having lived in the United States. And if they would take him to these records, they could find records of him in the courts in Detroit and in Virginia Beach. And there had also been an arrest in New York. He had a hard time staying out of jail there in the 30s. They, you know, were reluctant about that. But there were big men standing around, tall men with no hair and big thick glasses, standing around staring at him. This is in 2100 in a seacoast town in Nebraska. They put him on a ship. Looked like a cigar, large cigar, that moved very fast but close to the ground. And they went to Detroit and found records. And they took Edgar Cayce with them. They went to New York, but New York was being rebuilt. Something had happened to it, and they were fixing it back up. And then they came on to Virginia Beach, and this may be wish fulfillment part of the dream, for they found Virginia Beach flourishing, and there were a lot of records here about Edgar Cayce. And they got copies of records and headed back to Nebraska with this child that said he was Edgar Cayce. Now, we had an interpretation of that. And it said that this could be, that it was not fixed, but that it could be. And that it indicated that even the most difficult situations that you go through sometimes can work out in something that is good for everyone concerned. Note that they had records to establish proof of him having been at UKC in Detroit. Records, fingerprints, all kind of things, a lot of court records. But also those juvenile delinquency readings and the interest of this parole officer, and later the judge became a member of ARE. So it all ended up well. But a dream, a precognitive dream of the future. Ed Casey dreamed just like you and me, except that he dreamed while he was giving readings now and then. Harmon Bowe has described him as having one of the busiest unconsciouses that he has ever run into. While he's talking about somebody out in Kalamazoo and speaking in a room in Virginia Beach, he would also sometimes be dreaming and would stop and comment on what was going on around in people's minds who were sitting in the room. It was a very lively unconscious. Now, it was in 1923 that Educasi gave the first references to dreams and ended up with about 1,000 references to dreams in the 14,276 readings, which you find copies of upstairs. I will be using this afternoon in discussing Educasi's dreams with you this one of two volumes, which if you are ARE members and you are taking a busy time out of your schedule and come for a week on dreaming, you should not be without these two volumes on dreams. Everything that Educasi said on dreams, beautifully indexed. You find these volumes extremely helpful, and I will be using them today. He urged people to work with their dreams. He said they weren't paying enough attention to dreams. And it was extremely important that people remember and begin to work with their dream material. Freud said this, too, in a different way. Freud said that dreams are the royal road to the unconscious. That famous psychiatrist who is so controversial. He's almost as controversial as Ed Casey is. In a different way, quite, of course. Now, in Educasi's interpretations, and we will be dealing today with just his dreams, he talks about types of dreams. And I'm going to break them down into three types that he discussed of his own dreams. One about the physical body. He had dreams about his physical body. And we will start off a little later as we begin to get examples of these in details. But you will find, if you ask psychologists that know anything about the Educasi readings, that this is probably the largest collection of dream material where there are such specific and detailed references to help for the flesh body, guidance, direction, diets, medicine sometimes, but concern over helping the body. Educasi insists that your unconscious is capable of giving you tremendous help with your health problems. It's fascinating that he stresses this so. And Dr. Puryear, I've heard Dr. Puryear, who did his PhD work in the sleep laboratories, you'll be hearing him this week, of course, say that in his opinion, in the Educasi dream material, there was more material and stress on the physical body than any other mass of material, comparable material anywhere in the world. Now, the second type of dream, of course, are the mind dreams. They relate to the basic concerns of the mind, which are many. The mind solves problems. I mean, the dreams solve problems for you. They have solved a great many problems. Thomas Edison, of course, is known to have solved a great many of his problems in his catnaps. He dreamed solutions. The problem solving is one of the areas of the mind, and I'm calling them mind dreams, physical, the body dreams and mind dreams. There also, you will find that many of your dreams show conflict, and the conflict is between parts of you. As Edgar Cayce points out to himself, that frequently when you're not living up to your ideal, you will see this fight that is going on between one part of your unconscious and another part of your unconscious. And you see this as opposing forces. You may not even recognize either one of them, or they may be people that you recognize.
We'll be right back with more with Hugh Lynn Cayce on Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. We're back with Hugh Lynn Cayce.
You may not even recognize either one of them, or they may be people that you recognize, or you may be one of them and the other one looks like somebody else, but it's really part of you, and they're fighting. They're going on. A classical dream of this kind, I remember from a 17-year-old boy who was once here for a dream seminar. He had a cute dream. He came down one morning with it, and we had fun with it because it was rather obvious, but it was typical conflict. He said he saw himself in a beautiful hat with a big plume and lace cuffs and knee breeches, and he was had curls down. He was a Frenchman, but he had a sword, and he was fighting, and fighting a disreputable-looking character who was very, very shabbily dressed and dirty and so forth. But under his left arm, he had a beautiful damsel, and he was fighting off this shady-looking character. And when we questioned him closely, the shady character looked very much like him. The other part of him, in conflict over this basic attitude toward women, of course. All men have this kind of conflict all the time. Most of them, maybe you who have arrived here at this point, have gotten over those kind of conflicts, but I doubt it, seriously. I'd like to look at some of your dreams. I bet they're there. Now, he was jumping up and down, running up and down balusters and fighting and fighting and fighting, and he said, what could this possibly mean? Why am I dressed up in a French costume? We began to get him to try to wonder whether the urges that were pushing him in these directions, or this damsel that he was trying to save from the other part of himself, came out of a French incarnation. And, of course, the swords are beautiful Freudian symbology. So it's fascinating. But they're conflict dreams. Now, there are also wish fulfillment dreams in your that come in the mind category. You don't have enough time, of course, to worry in the daytime, so you worry at night too, and your dreams reflect this worry and this concern of yours. And frequently, if you haven't had something to eat and you go to bed a little hungry, you will eat a beautiful meal, and I recommend it as an excellent way, because you don't gain calories this way. But you get a lot of satisfaction, emotional satisfaction, out of eating in your dreams, as also having sex and all kinds of things, as you wise and well know. Now, beyond the mind dreams, and I've touched only some phases of these, are the guidance dreams. And they come from the higher self, and they're inspirational in nature. They may not be but a few of those in all of our lives. But when we have them, they change our lives, and they become extremely important for us. Now, let me mention another book that she didn't. I don't know why she didn't show you this one. It's connected with dreams. This is one I did a long time ago. Oh, it hasn't got my name on it. That's what's the matter with it. But it's on the inside. It's called Dreams, the Language of the Unconscious, and it's a series of essays, and I think you would find it extremely interesting. In this, there is a There are several essays. There's one there by Shane Miller that gives you a picture of some of the symbols that Shane found for the high self, the guidance part of us that we need to listen to. And Peterson, William N. Peterson's essay in here has excellent material on Project X, where we developed psychic, had seven boys in a three-week project, and some of their dreams were recorded. In fact, they recorded all of their dreams, and there were some of them that had psychic material in them when they started, and they improved. And we were doing dieting and various kinds of things to change. And so you'd find that interesting. But the one I want to share just a bit with you is from Dr. Tom Clark's. Now, this is not the Tom Clark that you might know about, but this is a doctor, a PhD, who studied for a year with Dr. Carl Jung in Zurich. And what he has done in his essay is to study Educase's dreams with the background of his Jungian philosophy, his Jungian point of view. He talks about Educase at this point. Let me read a moment. This is from page 35. The psychic as a man. At this point, I want to say a few words about Educase the man and what these dreams reveal on his character and personality. Nothing is more illuminating of the real person that lies behind the shallow mask of consciousness than his dreams. And when these dreams are recorded in chronological sequence over a period of years, we see not only the dominant character traits, but also their development and changes. Along with the man's weaknesses, fears, doubts, anxieties, hates, irritations, emotional instability, we see his strength, courage, principles, honesty, trustworthiness, and loyalty. It is all paraded for examination and review. Did you realize that your dreams were all of that and more? From one point of view, there is good reason for all of that to be hidden in the mystical dream language of dream symbols, which require patient hours of quiet introspection for the discovery of their real meaning and application. The bald, instantaneous truth about ourselves presented at one time would be too great a shock for most of us to bear. That's why it's given us, gives it to us in small doses. But patient digging and examination often turns a cruel fact in our dreams into a helpful solution, just as a large dose of medicine taken at one time may kill the patient, but if administered over a period of time in small doses, it performs a curative miracle. In the early dreams between 1925 and 30, Case is revealed as struggling and fighting with himself. He had a premonition that what came through him was of divine nature, and his dreams revealed to him that he was anything but divine individual. He struggled desperately with himself to live by and bring into his conscious life a few divine principles. At one time, his psychic source, when asked to interpret a dream, refused the information because it said that in the past, in connection with similar dreams which had been interpreted, Case had ignored the lesson and done nothing in his life to make correction or adjustment. Even his psyche then turned against him with impatience and criticism in certain respects, and unfortunately they were important. He was a weak man, even as most of us in these respects are weak. We don't think of Dad like this, but remember this is a psychologist, a psychiatrist thinking about him. After 1932, the content of the dreams started to alter. Fewer dreams were submitted to the psychic source for interpretation. There was a definite change in Case's spiritual development. The conflicts and doubts were pretty well resolved. He had a clear, intuitive comprehension of the meaning, importance, and validity of the information which came through him. I did not know Edgar Casey in this lifetime, and it is not my purpose to use these dreams to pass judgment in any respect upon him. His life and work, what he left behind, will do that. I cannot leave this subject, however, without stating that in despite of his weaknesses, doubts, fears, arrogance, perverseness, stubbornness, and sometimes downright honoriness, he nevertheless kept and preserved his desire to help people as an ideal throughout his life. This ideal dominated his entire life, and although it, in the end, it was accomplished, he did help people, and in addition, he left behind him a treasure which will be a continuing source of help to those who search it out. Dr. Tom Clark, after years, several years, more than one, I said one, working with Dr. Carl Jung. You'd find that, I think, that essay in his comparisons there of interest. Now, you can find in his 294 is his number. If you want to go upstairs and look up all of his dreams, they're there. And there are 81 of them, 181, I'm sorry, over a 17-year period. And they're all recorded, and many of them had interpretations. Now, one of these, 294-97, actually, he saw himself living 3 days in what was old Persia. It's now Iran, but old Persia, where he had founded a healing center, and where people were coming from all over the world to be healed. It is one of the incarnations where he said he developed his abilities and interest in a broad field of holistic healing, where healing dealt with a person and not with a disease. He urging himself to study this very carefully, that he would be able to have more dreams, and that they showed the influence coming from that period on this present life. Now, in that dream he had in 1927. In 1926, he had an interesting dream about a physical warning. He was crazy. And they took his top of his head off. You know, it's real simple to work things in dreams. They took the top of his head off and reached in and cleaned the wheels in his head, which had gotten clogged with dirt. Now, dust had lodged in these wheels and stuck them.
We'll be right back with more with Hugh Lynn Casey on Reflections. You're listening to Reflections, the wisdom of Edgar Casey. We're back with Hugh Lynn Casey.
Dust had lodged in these wheels and stuck them, and his wheels had quit running in his head. Very specific, direct. The interpretation pointed out to him, of course, that what he needed, the eliminations were clogging up. And when the eliminations clog up, dirt piles up, debris piles up somewhere in the body and gets you into trouble. And so frequently it can cause pressure on the nerves, and the diet needed to be changed, more water needed to be drunk, and a cleansing of the body to improve the whole elimination and circulation. Now, his next one is a fascinating one. I've just picked up different ones here to show you what a variety of dreams this man had, and you have the same kind. These were average sleep dreams. In this one, he had this one in 1925. Now, this was the year that we moved to Virginia Beach. I don't think we'd gotten here yet, but this one had some financial advice in it. Apparently, he dreamed about going to Virginia Beach. And then he was about to leave Virginia Beach. He took the train. And was headed for Chicago and Detroit. Now, he took the LNN railroad. Now, the LNN at that time came into Norfolk and had a ride out of here, and he saw the LNN. Now, this was a very fascinating one because the reading pointed out that 300 years to the day that he had this dream, he had first landed and then left Virginia Beach. He had come across the ocean in another life. This was a very disreputable life, really. He didn't do very well in this one. As a man character called Bainbridge. My father's life readings are one of the only ones that have their names attached to the life readings. But he stopped here and then left and went inland toward Chicago. And it was later that he had this, as a result of that, Detroit and Chicago, and the attack on a fort there when he was killed much later, when he died on a raft in the middle of the Ohio River with the Indians chasing him on either side. And let me stop and tell you, well, I've got time enough, but let me stop anyway and tell you a little story that really blew my mind when I ran into it here. Dad had had that reading, that life reading, that indicated his death with many other people who were trying to escape from the Indians, and they were on a big raft in the river, and they were fighting the Indians off, and they were trying to get to them. They didn't have very much food, and they were a group, whole group of them, and they were starving. And the Indians finally killed them all, because they got so weak, couldn't fight. Dad went in to, we had just gotten to Virginia Beach, and Dad went into a barbershop here at Virginia Beach, and was getting a haircut, and there was a little three-year-old boy playing around on the floor. And he had a box of animal crackers in his hands, and he was crying, fretting, and the barber, Mr. Tarr, called him, and said, "Bobby, come here and see Mr. Casey." He said, I've said under his breath to my father, "I've got to keep him awake until his mother picks him up. She's gone to the grocery." And there was no one else in the barbershop except my father. And Bobby Keg came down off the chair and grabbed his box of animal crackers and came over close to the... And he was real sleepy, rubbing his eyes and whining. And he looked up at my father. Dad didn't say anything. And he said, "I know you." And his father said, "Bobby, you've never seen Mr. Casey before in your life." "Oh," he said, "I know him. He knows about this." He said, "We were on a big river together, on a big raft. And we were awful hungry then. You better have a cracker." No one knew in Virginia Beach about that life reading my father had given himself. Is the boy telepathic at 3 years old? Or is it a memory of a previous life, and was he really on that raft with Eddie Casey in the Ohio River? But this 300 years, that was part of that incarnation. Now, the crazy part about this is that the LNN Railroad, Dad had been given an account in the stock market by the president of ARE. And so whenever Dad had a dream that related to stocks, why, he would buy some for him, just a little bit for him, and he was gradually building up quite a portfolio on his own dreams. And this one had to do with the stock market there. The railroad stock, this LNN stock, and it said that it was going down to 99, it was up, and then would go up to 109. And these were the numbers of the cars that they had, so, with the LNN on them. And he said, sell, and short, and then buy. And he made a little money for his account out of that dream. The readings say that we can get all kinds of help from our dreams. Now, the next one I wanted to speak to you about was one that he had in 1932, and it is quite a dream. In the dream, it was a symbol. It was explaining to him how he gave readings. And the dream was extremely interesting. Let me show you what it looked like. He saw the sparrow in his dream. And he saw a tiny little dot start here and go up. And it would be pulled over to one of these sides as it went up. And he pointed out that this was the way he worked. That he would, this was consciousness. And when he was in the altered state of consciousness, the, can you all see that? That he would move up in this spiral, and these were levels or planes or levels of thought, particular planes of consciousness or levels of consciousness, and that wherever he needed the information for this particular person, he would move over to the side to make contact at that level, at that plane, according to their tune. As he pointed out, the higher he went, the more universal the business became. The more universal the attunement was possible for him. And he made choices. He made attunement. He was not getting it from an entity or guide or somebody that he might run into people on the way and now and then, or coming back, talk to them. But he traveled in this funnel of light, on a shaft of light. And that's the way it appeared to him. And he traveled, he saw himself as a little wiggle tail, but he was seeing himself in a dream, in this case. You would find that an extremely interesting one to read. It's 294, 131, if you'd like to look at it. It was given in 1932. And he pointed out that different cities, wherever the person was located, had different vibrations. That, as he said, for example, Chicago would have a completely different vibration from Rochester, which would be a better vibration because of the interest in healing that was there, and the activities tied up in Chicago were not as high in their vibratory rate. So anyone there was affected. It was by the place that the person was had an effect on. It's a discussion of the whole business of attunement. Now, Dr. Puryear, in Meditation in the Mind of Man, he and Mark Thurston have developed from this very drawing. He's developed that V to describe the consciousness and the subconscious and then the superconscious up here, the different levels of consciousness. But it's taken from the same shape of the spiral and the opening and the higher consciousness that you get into there. I think you might be interested in that. It's a good explanation of how the information was obtained and how he moved in to make the attunement at these different levels of consciousness. Now, the next one, I want to read to you parts of it because it's a dream that he didn't have any interpretation of. In fact, the dream is almost its own interpretation.
We'll be right back with more with Hugh Lynn Casey. You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Casey. We're back with Hugh Lynn Casey.
In fact, the dream is almost its own interpretation. He had this in 1942. He was to die in 1945, early in 1945. Thank you very much. And the pressure had built up on Dad. I wasn't here in those years. I went to war. My neighbors dragged me off screaming and hollering. And I left Sally and my wife and a 3-month-old baby. And when I came back, he was 3 years old. And Dad was getting tired the pressure of the readings had built up tremendously. He was giving far too many. The mail was being delivered in sacks, the telegrams in packages, the phones had to be turned off, and the pressure was building. There's a River had been published, but more than that, a Miracle Man of Virginia Beach article in what was a very popular magazine in those days, Carnet. You may remember it. But it brought him just thousands of letters and money in all the letters, asking, pleading for help. And most, he had to hire people to send it back, just sit there and mail it back. He was, appointments were made, 8 readings at a time, each session at 16 readings a day, they said it sometimes, for 2 years ahead. So the pressure was building. And he had this dream, and it's a kind of spiritual encouragement in a way, but a fascinating one. It is 294-196 in this book, which is upstairs in the library, or it's also in under that, just look up 294-196 in the readings themselves, and you'll find it. All of his dreams are right together. Early Sunday, it was the 12th month and 13th day, so it was December the 13th, 1942, Edgar Casey dreamed. I was sitting alone in the front room playing solitaire when there was a knock at the front door. It was dark outside, but rather early in the evening. When I went to the door, a gentleman whom I did not recognize asked, "Casey, I want you to go with me to a meeting this evening." At first I said, but I seldom go out of evening, and my wife is here, and it would leave her alone. But he insisted I should go with him, and I did. As I went out, I realized that another person was waiting for us in the street. We walked toward the ocean. But when we came to the ocean, we walked on as if into the air, up and up and up, until we came to where there seemed to be a large circus tent. He said, "We'll go in here." We approached the flap of the tent, and as he pulled the flap back, I for the first time realized that the two men with whom I had been walking were evangelist Dwight L. Moody and Sam Jones. These were evangelists that my father heard as a child back in Kentucky as he was growing up. We entered a large circular tent. A very unusual kind of light pervaded the place, something like an opalescent light. Many figures were there. All seemed to be shrouded, all dressed alike. Very few I remembered ever having seen before. Then to one side of the place, as more and more figures appeared until it was full, it seemed that there was a large screen on that side, and as if there was lightning in the distance. With the lightning, there was a noise, not of thunder, but of wind, yet nothing seemed to stir.
It's time for the Thought for the Day, and today's Thought for the Day will be read by Kimberly Rose. To find out more, go to kimmyrose.com. That's KimmyRose.com. Well, hello.
Hi.
And what's today's Thought for the Day?
Today's Thought for the Day is reading 1431:1. Then, to be able to remember the sunset, to be able to remember a beautiful conversation, a beautiful deed done where hope and faith were created, to remember the smile of a babe, the blush of a rose, the harmony of a song, a bird's call. These are creative, for if they are part of thyself, they bring you closer and closer to God. I did the same thing. I said,
Oh, yes.
Because that's when we're talking about safety or peace and actually experiencing that, it's that feeling. And I always, with hypnosis, I'll take moms or, you know, mothers or fathers, and I'll take them to the moment that they held their children in their arms, or if you have an animal that you love or something, just to, it's about really remembering it, but being in presence of the feeling of the infinite joy, which is God. And it brings you closer and closer because God is within. So it's really saying being positive thought and appreciation and gratitude for everything.
I've noticed that, say I'm in a negative mindset or just feeling lousy or angry, then I can think of certain songs. Just thinking of that, not just listening to it, it can change the way I feel dramatically. I've never thought of it as being closer to God, but I guess if you're thinking of something of beauty, then that's something that God would create. All good things come from God above.
That is so, so true. And that when you know that you have that connection, how can you ever say that you're alone?
Oh, yes. Wow. Well, thank you for doing the thought for the day today.
Thank you.
That's all the time we have for the show today. Thanks for listening to Hugh Lynn Casey's presentation. To find out more, go to edgarcasey.org. Thanks also to Kimberly Rose for the thought for the day, and most of all to you, the listener. Thanks for listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Casey.